Drawing room over here.
You made it. Oh, come on through. Do you fancy drink? What's your tipple?
Dark Side of the Moon catapulted Pink Floyd to heights that very, very few bands have reached. But it didn't come out of nowhere. This was a group that had already put out 7 albums and had set a standard for progressive and psychedelic music that would inspire generations of artists. Nick Mason was there from the beginning, the band's drummer and one of the founding members. And it's those early days that lie at the heart of his latest project, Sourceful of Secrets. They're heading to Australia later this year, but first, Nick Mason's my guest. Hello, Nick.
It's great to be here.
For those listening who aren't dyed-in-the-wool Floydians, take me back to those early days of Pink Floyd and the music that you were creating then. How did those first albums start to come together?
Well, they were put together in much more of the sort of classic rock format. Certainly the very first album, Piper, was recorded at Abbey Road with an engineer and a producer who'd actually worked with the Beatles. And in fact, while we were recording Piper, the Beatles were recording Sgt. Pepper just down the corridor. So it was a sort of, I say, mechanized. It wasn't quite mechanized, but the songs were shorter, and it was expected to make singles rather than an album. And of course, that was all just about to change when Sgt. Pepper came out.
You've said you had charts to try and track the track A Sourceful of Secrets. How much was planned and how much was, you know, let's just see how it goes?
Well, a lot of it was let's see how it goes. We had there was a sort of form to it. So we actually knew that we wanted to put sort of 3 sort of sections together. But a lot of it was experimenting with, I think we were dipping cymbals into bowls of water, and the piano part was always known as Rats in the Piano, which was the piano being played not with the keyboard, but actually on the strings of the piano itself. And there was quite a lot of experimenting with the sound, even if we maybe had a rough outline of where the melodies were going to go.
You mentioned the Abbey Road Studios. This is a place with an enduring legacy, but it's a studio in those days. It was quite different to what you'd find today. I mean, you mentioned the term mechanized. What did you mean there?
Well, it was more, well, I won't say a factory, but it was a much more rigid operation. You know, particularly the Beatles were beginning to carve out a new way of recording, which is when you had the studio to yourself for as long as you liked. But our initial recordings were made during specific session periods of 9 till 12 and 2 till 5, and then maybe, you know, being really exotic, staying up late from 6 till 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. And the engineers, there was clear demarcation. We weren't really meant to touch the tape recorders, which was something that changed over quite rapidly, in fact, in our case, because we wanted to learn how to make records. So actually, we did touch the tape recorders and we did learn how to edit tape. But in theory, the engineering department would come down if one plug needed to be moved. There'd be someone sent down to do it. So it felt a bit more like, let's say, the BBC than the sort of freewheeling recording studios that were to come along.
Now, Lee Harris, who approached you with the idea of Sourceful of Secrets, has talked about the kind of experimental nature of your early drumming. Who were your big influences in those early days? You've talked about some of the jazz artists on the Blue Note Records catalogue, for example.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I've always been a fan of that sort of bebop era, the Art Blakey sort of player. But having said that, I came to a wonderful world of great rock drummers, you know, starting with Ginger Baker, who was really the inspiration for me as to how to get finding what I wanted to do. But there was Ginger, but there was also Mitch Mitchell, Jimi Hendrix's drummer, Keith Moon. I mean, it was wall to wall great influences.
And speaking about the context, I suppose, the world around you, if you like, as you were beginning to make your mark, looking back from the outside, it seems like an era where a lot was changing and kind of imbued your music with that feeling or sense of change. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think we sort of moved from what was essentially the idea of rock and roll being entirely ephemeral, that I think there was a class issue almost, that the working classes would be a rock star for a few months and then be replaced. I mean, there's some remarkable examples of people who actually went through all that and came out the other side. Someone like Cliff Richard, who's still working now. But a lot of the other artists sort of came and went quite quickly. And then there was this new bunch of guys coming out, quite often coming out of art schools, who saw it in a very different light. And of course, post Sergeant Pepper, we stopped just making singles and started making far more elaborate albums.
So coming to Saucerful of Secrets, how should fans understand this? I mean, it's definitely not a tribute band. It's also not an attempt to be Pink Floyd. So how do you describe this project?
I think really that it's an attempt to bring some of the Pink Floyd catalogue that people are unfamiliar with. You know, there's some great songs from Sid, and there's some really interesting longer pieces that perhaps point the way that we were going to end up going, so the route we were going to go down.
It's almost like one of those chapter books, you know, find your own adventure. Perhaps this is a different fork in the road for Pink Floyd?
Yeah, I mean, we could have gone in a number of ways. And I think quite a lot of what we do with the sources is it's an indication of how it developed and sort of where it developed from, which I think can be interesting, partly because it also shows the spirit of it. It's a simpler form in a way, I suppose, but certainly the spirit of the way we play now is very much modelled on how it was done in 1967.
And that spirit, you say, Nick, is very much sort of cemented in the idea of improvisation. This must hold a particular appeal for you. Is this a chance to sort of do something new, or a chance that perhaps it could fail at any moment? I mean, that is the essence of improvisation, is it not?
It is, but the trick, it seems to me, is to work with really good people who can cover up anything that gets too messy. I think we still utilize the structure of most of the songs, but there is the opportunity to put in something completely different or completely new. There are various sections in the music that just, it's very easy just to drop in into them and experiment a little bit.
Nick Mason's my guest. We're talking about Pink Floyd and his Saucerful of Secrets tour. I'll give you some details about that in just a moment. And Nick, you'd largely been out of the touring grind for quite a while. What's it been like heading back out on the road again?
Well, absolutely terrific. I've absolutely loved it. The reason really for this happening was a few years ago, we did an exhibition at the V&A Museum in London, which was really interesting. We showed a lot of the equipment we'd used and how we used it and so on. But there was no playing of live music. And I realized that was something really missing from my life. And I've enjoyed every single gig of the Saucers that we've done. We've done about 100 shows so far. And I've, as I say, I've just really enjoyed that sense. It reminds me of exactly how it was with Pink Floyd in 1967, that enthusiasm for playing and for making music.
Just thinking about returning to touring, and I mean, it hurts my knuckles with arthritis just thinking about what you'll have to do to prepare and to warm up. What kind of sort of match fitness do you need to return to the road again?
Nothing too bad. Practice staying up very late and listening to loud music seems to be.
Everything your mother told you not to do, of course.
Yeah, exactly. As I say, it's great fun. It's not, and it's the 10,000 hour things. You get very good at playing in a lazy way, but doing the same thing with less effort.
It does seem like there's a sort of recognition to this project as well. You know, drummers aren't often the face of a group, even when they're at the centre of it, like you were. What's it like being recognised as yourself instead of being part of the bigger group that is Pink Floyd?
I've really enjoyed it. I didn't really expect it to work quite like that. I thought it would be sort of work in a slightly different way. And I think, in fact, though I'm given a sort of rostrum to sit on and I've got a bigger drum kit, but the others still definitely feel as though they're doing most of the heavy lifting, I suppose would be the best way of putting it.
Of course, Pink Floyd has been marked by splits within the band over the years. Is Saucerful of Secrets providing a little more of an easygoing pathway to making the music you love?
Oh, definitely. Much easier. It's maybe it's a sort of model to show David and Roger how it could be if they were nicer to each other.
Well said. Well, look, Nick, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for being my guest here on RN Drive.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Nick Mason will be bringing his Saucerful of Secrets tour to Australia in September. Check online for details. You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.